Hi, I'm Pat Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, the Bears lost their second straight game, and this one was ugly, just like the previous one. We'll talk about that more from Indianapolis, coming up on Halas Intrigue. Jason, the Bears still can't run the ball. They can throw the ball a lot, but also turn it over. And they let a worse quarterback beat them terribly today in Indianapolis. 21-16 Colts. Just an affront to football for most of the game, offensively, and just kind of a slog to watch, wasn't it?
Terrible game to watch for everybody that sat through that, and I doubt anybody outside of Indianapolis or Chicago sat through that, because why would you? A day where the Bears, Pat, got every possible break, pretty much like the Tennessee game to open the season,
sure,
and then didn't win. They so often, figuratively and literally, threw away this good fortune that landed in their lap. And this offense is not right. Caleb Williams is playing in his third game. It's more than that. It's more than just, oh, he's a rookie quarterback, he's trying to find his way. It's more than that. There is no running game here.
Nope.
And that was a strength last year. So Shane Waldron has undone the one thing this team was good at before he got here. And there's a lot of carryover in personnel, too. So it's a lot of the same people.
Are you telling me the 2.3 yards per carry is a bad thing?
Pat, that might not even be the worst they've been this season off the top of my head. I'm not sure. I actually didn't look – it didn't look like their worst game, but it was bad.
Right. And the Colts, I think, are a walking, talking, living example of what happens if you can run the ball and literally do nothing else, because that's what happened to them today. Jonathan Stewart – or Jonathan Taylor. I always want to call him Jonathan Stewart, the old – Oregon running back. Anyway, Jonathan Taylor, 23 for 110 and two touchdowns. The Colts average 4.5 yards a carry. That's pretty good. That means you're 3rd-and-1 all the time. If the Bears could do that, the Bears would be 2-1 or maybe 3-0. But they just can't. And it's the more we watch, the more frustrating it gets.
I think we talked about it this week leading up to this game. We are out of the runway part of the season here where we're looking at that season opener saying, hey, anything can happen. It's Caleb Williams' debut. You give him a pass on that. The Houston game, that was way too difficult of a game for Caleb Williams, I think, and for them at large at this stage. Now you're getting into where it can't be a thing of, well, trying to find our way when you're two games in. And you start playing teams that are very, very much on your level, mm-hmm, in the Colts and several of the teams coming up. And I'm flagging a lot of problems here. I'm flagging major problems in the running game, major problems in the play calling, and we can get to that just disaster option call at the goal line in a minute. I'm seeing issues in Matt Eberflus's handling of things. Like, this is not going the right way right now. And there is a lot of season left.
Yep.
Things can change, and the biggest source of change for the Bears remains Caleb Williams getting better and better and better as they go. But you can sound the alarm right now. This is not off to a good start. This is not headed the right way.
When they score a touchdown to go down by 5 and run out the extra point team instead of going for 2 right away and then have to burn a timeout, that happened today. Any 8-year-old who plays Madden knows that you go for 2 in that situation. When you have situations where you are so bad at running the football that you now have to dream up crazy ways to try to get literally 3/4 of a yard, and it doesn't work. I mean, there's, when you have, and I'll take this even to Ryan Poles, when you have an offensive line that is making changes, and, Nate Davis has a groin injury, fine. But it sure as heck looked to me like Nate Davis lost his starting job today.
Nate Davis played.
Yeah, he played a snap.
I mean, he was available. He played.
Yeah, played a little bit, but he was replaced by Matt Pryor. When you are sounding the alarm, to use your words, on the offensive line this early, that is a Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham and Matt Eberflus and Chris Morgan problem. There's just a lot of that going around. And you're right. It's, I argued to you on Thursday that, they were underdogs in this game. And you said that 1 point wasn't an underdog. I tell you, it's still an underdog. We are 1-2. And we're in a position where they won the game they were favored to win and lost the games they were favored to lose. But the way they've done it just makes it – that's the concerning part.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, and that's to get to Caleb Williams a little bit, if you just picked up this box score And you read that
pretty good for third game ever.
You read 33 for 52 for 363 yards. You go, wow, that was pretty amazing, wasn't it? But then you go, oh, he threw two interceptions. Oh, there was a fumble when they had a chance to march down the field and take the lead. And, you know, he had a pass rating of 80.8. That is by far the best he has done this year and also by far below league average. And that's, you know, that's – they can't live like this when he is throwing 52 times a game. That's just – it's a good way to get him killed. It's a good way to make sure your games go 4 hours long, and it's a good way to ensure that you'll never run the football well ever again.
Two questions for you. What did Caleb Williams say when you asked him about throwing 52 times in a game?
He said, oh, for real, essentially? Like, he didn't know that he threw that often.
He thought that couldn't be possible.
Yeah, and he did.
That couldn't be correct.
Yes, and you know, it's not good for him, and it's not good for them if they do it this way.
Second question. Mm-hmm. What possible explanation did Matt Eberflus have for not being on top of things on that point after two-point conversion situation?
He essentially said it was on the coaches to not be clear about their communication right away. But, I mean, Caleb said he went to the sideline because they were saying kick team.
The kick team was out. Yeah. This is not Caleb and Roma Dunte's fault.
Right, yeah. And although they're kind of playful arguing over the football, like, we could do that later. But, yes, right. Yeah, it was bad. And them burning a timeout isn't the reason they lost the game. But I think it is a window into some questions that you have that, you know, that window was open last week, too, when, you know, they threw the red flag twice on plays that everybody in the building knew were already correct.
Yeah, you're talking about Eberflus specifically in this situation. And to be honest, Pat, this has been a source of criticism. This vulnerability of his that you can criticize, mm-hmm. this has been on the table for 2+ years.
Yep.
Because mm-hmm. that's a lot of this. Like, while Caleb Williams is new and Roma Dunze is new and the rebuilt defense is a little bit new, some of this is being viewed with Matt Eberflus, and by extension, Shane Waldron is Matt Eberflus. It's all the same.
Right.
It all falls under Eberflus's jurisdiction. The Matt Eberflus conversation is being viewed in the context of his entire time as a coach.
Yeah.
And we have not seen once in Matt Eberflus' time with the Bears that he can do things other than be a very, very good defensive coordinator.
Right.
I'm not saying that he can't, that it's impossible, but we haven't seen it yet.
Yep. I mean, the next good offensive game they play will be under him. The next good throwing game they have under him will probably be the first in 3 years.
There hadn't been much of that.
Yeah, there wasn't much of that. And, you know, I would argue to you that his area of expertise is actually doing well, and Matt Nagy's area of expertise never did well. But that's not good enough.
I mean, that's a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
And
it's a bigger job than that.
Yeah, and we also just saw what happens when you show up with a really good defense. I mean, to play a bottom 10 team in the NFL on the road, just having a pretty good defense doesn't get it done.
I don't think it'll be the case.
Yeah.
But this could be the only game the Colts win this year. That team was so bad today.
Right.
They're not going to win many.
And the quarterback's horrible. I mean, he may get better. This was only his sixth or seventh career start. Seventh, I believe. But boy... He did not look the part at all. Jason, is there reason to freak out yet? And well, I ask because this, nothing that we saw today is acceptable. They are also lined up now to play the Rams, the Panthers, the Jaguars, the Commanders, the Cardinals, the Patriots.
You told me the Rams are... the Bears are favored against the Rams.
I think the look ahead line is they're favored, yeah.
Very surprising because the Rams are better. Even the Rams with some injuries are better than this Colts team.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. I mean,
they have Matt Stafford. They have arguably the best coach in the game in Sean McVay. Like they've got more than what the Colts have today. This isn't time to freak out. You're three games in. But it also isn't time to be, well, wait and see.
Right.
There's been enough seeing to know that there are problems here.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Eberflus, you know, we talked during the week, as now that Matt Eberflus is still calling the defense, this is not what he said he was going to be doing when he took the job. You know, how much of his time does he divert to the offense? Because the offense is very problematic. And we've been telling Matt since the day they hired him, you can get fired for the offense being bad.
Sure, yeah.
It was literally a question in his opening, in his introductory press conference with the Chicago Bears, about being responsible for the offense, and that would be on his ledger. And his answer is like, well, basically, you know, anytime there's a problem, I divert, I spend extra time there. I'm like, okay, so then do you give some extra responsibilities to Eric Washington, the defensive coordinator? No, I still do the same. So we're in this thing where it's like he's spending half his time with the 50% of his time with the defense and 75% of his time with the offense, but that doesn't add up.
Right, and it's he was very proud of Shane Waldron, of being able to hire Shane Waldron. Shane Waldron had experience. Luke Getsy did not. Shane Waldron, you know, was pretty good with the Seahawks for 3 years and was only available because they decided to fire Pete Carroll. Waldron brought with him, you know, Thomas Brown, who he went back to the Rams with as his pass game coordinator. He brought Kerry Joseph. He brought the wide receivers coach with him. They essentially let Shane come and build his little fiefdom short of the O-line and tight ends coach. This is not good for Matt that Shane is so underwhelming through three games. And it's not, I mean, it's definitely not good for Shane. But when you say they're one entity, you're right. And, you know, if Waldron does poorly, you know, I don't think Matt has the capital to go make a change. I think everything gets changed.
Yeah.
That's at the end of the season at the earliest, I think. But it's not good.
I mean, a GM probably gets to fire one coach.
Yep.
And then hire a new one. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
A head coach probably gets to fire one offensive coordinator.
Yep.
Once you fire two, you also. And the reason that, Pat, again, one of the reasons why Shane Waldron was a relatively good hire,
yep,
given the circumstances, is because it was a limited pool of candidates because you weren't hiring for the head coaching job.
Right.
So you weren't going to be choosing from the best of the best the way the teams that were hiring for the head job were. Like, maybe you could get Ben Johnson, for example, if you're hiring for the head job, although I don't know what would ever get the guy to leave Detroit if he's not going to leave yet.
A lot of money, right?
I don't know. But, you know, it was the best of limited options that they had. And Shane Waldron was a good hire out of the options that they had.
Right. Well, and that's what was, I mean, you know, that's where Caleb Williams comes into this, too. The reason it was an attractive job for everybody kind of below the head coach level was because of Caleb Williams. It sure as heck wasn't because of Matt Eberflus. It wasn't, I mean, Matt Eberflus is on a shorter leash than a new head coach would be. You know, if you're moving to Chicago to work for Matt, you know, you have to know that there's a possibility that you're here for a year. And Caleb and what Caleb could do and what Caleb showed at the college level was enough to make this all worth it. And he still may be that, but through three games, he looks very much like your run-of-the-mill rookie quarterback. And Cole Kmet said something today after the game where we asked how he thought Caleb played. He said, you know, there were times where he looked like the number one pick. And he went like, okay. Like, that's maybe damning with faint praise. I know what he was trying to say, which was that, you know, when he was good, he was really good today. But, you know, it also goes to show that the previous two games, he really didn't look like the number one overall pick.
It's an interesting arc for Caleb Williams over these first three games, because the first game, what you saw was really just off accuracy-wise, but no dumb decisions,
mm-hmm,
in that first game. You've seen some real bad judgment flare up in the second and third game.
Yeah.
And including today, you saw some bad judgment.
The fumble, if Justin Fields had been strip-sacked in the fourth quarter with 7 minutes to play and a chance to win the game,
it would have been just another Sunday, but go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's happened to Justin and it's happened to Mitch Trubisky, and both times, you know, we justifiably killed them for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Caleb, I think you have to kill him for it. I mean, you can sit there and say, yes, it's his third game, but, you know, he was in position to go win the game and couldn't. Defensively, Jason, I'm hesitant to give the Bears too much credit because Anthony Richardson was so bad that he just threw the ball to them a couple of different times, including once in the end zone, which was just,
I was amazed when he threw one coming out of halftime.
Oh, he threw it 30 yards over
just
the guy's head?
Just the first play coming out of the half, interception. Right. It was crazy.
Is this defense, do we still think it's something that they can win because of going forward?
Yeah, but not entirely because of, I mean, it can't be 100, it can't be the Tennessee game.
Right.
This was the formula of the Tennessee game pretty much. And well, it didn't, and it wasn't enough. Like, no, that's not something that's going to be able to work.
Well, and I wonder too whether, and not to go into hot special teams talk here, but, you know, one of the differences between now and the Tennessee game was special teams. I mean, Cairo Santos came out for, what was it, 57-yard?
56, I think, to open the game.
Yeah, and left it very short. And then you've got this situation where the Colts are punting on fourth and a couple, and their long snapper did the head bob thing and got the Bears to jump off sides. You know, the Colts offense runs back on the field and, you know, turns out a 70-yard touchdown drive. That, you know, you could argue was the difference in the game. Those are two special teams moments that the Bears need to have back and can't afford. I mean, their offense is so bad they can't afford to be losing on the margins, you know, in defense or special teams, even when, you know, on the whole, they've, you know, been pretty good this year.
Nonetheless, their defense has given them a performance that should be 3-0.
Yeah.
This holding the Colts to 21, holding the Texans to 19 on the road last week, those are good enough to win. You should be 3-0 if you're the Bears.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have taken much to win those games offensively.
Yeah, and, you know, 7 of the 21 Colts points came when Caleb Williams fumbled at the 16, and then they went and pounded it in. They really let them march the length of the field twice, and that is definitely good enough to win. Jason, where do we go from here? What needs I don't want to say fixing because that makes it sound easy, but what do you think the focus will be this week?
There has to be a run game in here somewhere.
Yep.
There has to be. Mm-hmm. This is an offensive line mostly intact from last year that was second in the league in rushing, I think. They were second, I think, last year and first the year before. And there's a lot of carryover personnel-wise from last year to this year. And now you have theoretically a better running back in DeAndre Swift. I don't think DeAndre Swift just forgot how to be a Pro Bowl 1,000-yard back.
Yeah, maybe. I'll tell you this. In game one, he had 10 carries for 30 yards. But one carry for 20 yards, and that was the one in which he hurdled the guy. Game two, 14 for 18. Game three, 13 for 20. So we're talking about a guy who's averaged 1.5, 1.3, and 3.0 yards per carry. And Jason, if you took away the long there, he would be averaging about 1 yard per carry in that first game. So, I mean, this is, you know, as I like to say, like, if he just laid his body forward from head to toe, he'd be gaining more yards than he is right now.
You saw Waldron try to mix in Roshan Johnson. He had 8 carries for 30 yards. It's 3.8. He was the best of the guys they had. First time we've seen him, I think. Is that his first carries of the year?
Yep. Yes, correct.
I know we'd seen him on offense, but we hadn't even seen him on offense.
No, he was inactive in week one, and he didn't play on offense.
And they also, he dabbled in Khalil Herbert. That was 4 carries for 9 yards. There seem to be weapons here. Mm-hmm. There seems to be an offensive line where, was it 4 out of the 5 were on the offensive line that was a top rushing team in the league last year, and yet there's no ground game here.
Yeah, gave up 4 sacks today. He wasn't quite under pressure the way he was in week 2, but there were times Caleb would do the thing where he spun around and had his back to the line of scrimmage and would try to run for his life. And, I would give the offensive line, a C today? Which is an upgrade only when you compare it to the F they got the week before.
I don't know if you can give them a C when they average 2.3 yards per rush.
C minus?
C is pretty generous, I would say. But I don't know what the fix is either, Pat. If Shane Waldron can't figure out how to use these guys, you can't really change out the guys.
Right. The fix is play better. And that's hard to talk about and hard to make sound interesting, but the fix is do the thing we're telling you to do, but do it better.
You're not going to get different people in here that are better than the starting 5.
Nope, you're not.
Until March.
Yeah.
Until you have, 3 draft picks in the first 2 rounds and a ton of cap space because the backups aren't. I mean, you saw Matt Pryor played. It didn't change everything.
Nope, did not.
You put him in. You got what you wanted. If you're a Bears fan and you've been yelling at Nate Davis for the last couple years.
Yeah.
And that didn't change everything. They didn't magically become this, you know, at least middle of the road offensive line. I thought they were just as shaky today as they had been.
Maybe not. I thought they were better than Sunday night.
He's under Sunday pressure night, all the time,
but
man.
Sunday night was as violent of a game as we'd seen
against a better defense.
Yeah, I mean, much better.
They allowed quite a bit of pressure from a defensive front that isn't really good, isn't really known to be good to begin with,
right,
and is missing a star in DeForest Buckner.
Yeah, the Bears really had the Colts in a good position here coming into the game. And just, this is one of those where if they get to the point where later in the season they're playing meaningful football, they'll look back and be like, oh, I wish we had this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all count.
Yeah.
To answer your question, though, what really needs to happen here is a run game. And when we go back to the press conference after the game where you asked Kayla Williams about throwing 52 times and whether that can be their identity. And first off, he was like, wait, what? 52 times, really? Oh, he had to look at the PR guy to see.
Right.
And then he kind of pivoted into,
Yo, man, I'll do whatever the team wants me to do. Yeah.
Towing the company line and saying, hey, yeah, if I have to throw 50 times a game, so be it, to paraphrase. But he knows better.
Right.
He knows that's not how anybody is winning. It's not just about him. Patrick Mahomes is also not winning that way.
Do you know how many games USC won last year? Half of them. Do you know why? Because they had to do that and they had no defense. And he's just lived that. And I think he's in, I think if he keeps getting better, Jason, that it's reasonable to throw it 30 times a game probably in the modern NFL. But, 52 is crazy.
And right now it's not a clean, easy 52 passes either. There's a lot of clutter in the pocket. There's a lot of pressure. You are asking Kayla Williams 3 games in. Talented as he is, and trust me, there's some culpability on his part too.
Right.
But you are asking him to overcome a lot when there isn't pass protection and there isn't a run game, and you're gonna there's so much so that you're gonna have to throw 50 plus times in your third pro game ever.
Yeah.
You are asking him to overcome way too much right now.
And the wide receiver you paid $24 million isn't playing. Like that's not helping either. Jason, we will break this down even further as the week goes on. But until then, you can follow Mark, Jason, and myself on social media. Check out the Chicago Sun-Times online. Or if you live in town, pick up a newspaper. He's Jason Leisure. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again real soon.